This is Dawn Ray, and I'm your host for The Jump. This podcast is all about inspiring change, courage, and confidence, building grit. I'm an executive coach and speaker. I've worked for 20 years as a finance executive in New York City and London. I've also attended Georgetown Law and Boston College, and I'm a New York qualified lawyer. I've studied personal development, performance, including sports psychology, and resilience for 15 years. I'll be giving you the techniques, mindset frameworks, and high performance strategies to finally do the thing that you're scared to do, that jump, because that, my friends, is where the level up is. This is The Jump, parachute required. So today's episode, very short, is going to be based on a book by Joseph Nguyen. And his last name is spelled N-G-U-Y-E-N. It's called Don't Believe Everything You Think. Now, it talks a lot about mindset, and many of the works on Stoicism also talk about mindset. And when I talk about mindset in this regard, I'm talking about perception of the world around you. So I'm just going to read you a little excerpt. What Joseph says is that most people live in their own thoughts and perceptions of the world. The meaning or thinking we give an event is what determines how we ultimately feel about it. The meaning or thinking is the filter through which we see life from then on. Because of this, we live through a perception of reality, not in reality itself. Reality is the event happened with no meaning, no thinking, no interpretation of it. Any meaning or thinking we give the event is on us, and that is how our perception of reality is created. That is how our experience of life is created, from the inside out. It's not about the events that happen in our lives, but our interpretation of them, which causes us to feel good or bad about something. This is how people in third world countries can be happier than people in first world countries. And people in first world countries can be more miserable than people in third world countries. Our feelings do not come from external events, but from our own thinking about the events. Therefore, we can only ever feel what we are thinking. Now, it's like red pill, blue pill, matrix, huh? Pretty big. And what he's saying is really your misery or your happiness is down to your perception of the events that are around you. And when you think about it that way, well, happiness is a choice and misery is a choice. And that is, I mean, honestly, that's growth mindset 101, but it's also very, 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 very difficult to practice. I have had coaches and mentors and coaches and mentors, and like some of the best in the people in the world have trained me, because to get this stubborn brain to think differently, to begin to really control or to work with my mind and not let how society has conditioned me to think continue, but rather to start thinking for myself, to change my perceptions of events, that took so much damn work. Holy Mary. And you know what? The work is never done. I have to practice it every single day. And I think you should too. Because, and go back and like re-listen to what I just read to you, because it's only gonna sink in with repetition. But what he's saying is that the reality is neutral. The event is neutral. It's the meaning, the thinking that the meaning that we place on the event that impacts how we feel. It's our thoughts. So people say, what do you do as a performance coach, or what do you do as an executive coach? I get people to change their fucking thoughts about themselves and the world around them. That shit is big fucking work. I am not an executive coach who does fucking productivity. Who gives a shit? If someone more productive, they'll fucking stop in another month or two unless you figure out what thoughts are impeding their ability to get to that next level of performance, whether it's at work or in life or in their partnership or as a father or as a mother or whatever it is. That's the rewiring of the mind. It is a rewiring and a remapping of your perception of events. Now, I had a whole bunch of fucking bullshit happen in February of 2024. Holy cow, that month was medieval. Medieval from the very first day in February onwards. We're not going into it here because I'm not ready. Let's just say it was a shitstorm. And I wanted to quit everything. The industry, personal development industry, corrupt, the fucking lies, the people who think they're fucking celebrities. There are no celebrities. Like, I was running around. Like, I was in a state, dude. I was in a state. And I had a mentor at that time who said to me, Dawn, it was a particular experience I had early in February that triggered every fucking last trigger that I had. And I was not right energetically for 2 weeks. That has rarely happened to me. I've rarely had such a very physical reaction to an event or an interaction. I was in a particular room. Very rarely. So it set off a lot of alarm bells for me, a lot of alarm bells. And candidly, I think when you're down the wrong path or in the fucking wrong room, your body fucking tells you. And it with me, like, because I've done some very, very deep inner spiritual work. My body does not fuck around. It does not whisper to me. It bitch slaps me now, because I'm on a certain trajectory. Let's just say that. And my mentor had said to me, Dawn, how is this experience serving you? It's fucking not serving me. I fucking lost all this money, blah, 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 going on. He's like, no. How is this serving you? I had another mentor. Her name begins with an M. And I remember I was in DC, Washington, DC around mid-February. And this is a mom, like three kids, runs an extremely successful business. And this woman got on the phone with me and she was like, she was doing mindset, deep, deep mindset work. Like, on how I could perceive the series of events differently. I swear to God, my brain hurt. My brain hurt so much because I was requiring my brain to fire in a new way and create new neural pathways. This is like legit. This is the neuroscience stuff that Dan Huberman talks about. But, you know, that's why your brain, when you really learn something new, your brain literally hurts because there's so much energy going into creating the new neural fucking pathway. That's it. But I was very lucky enough that I was saying goodbye to some mentors and some very new ones were coming in quite quickly to ask me the right questions and to help me and guide me to see how the event served me. Very difficult. Then I was in another fucking room in Washington, D.C., and this other woman, a beautiful black lawyer, partner, incredible woman, she was like, how is this serving you? The question kept on coming to me from different people. None of these people fucking knew each other. And so I consider that like a download or it's probably, you know, that was the universe kind of slapping me over the head until I saw the point that I had to change my perception of the events. And in doing so, which takes a lot of freaking work, dude, takes a lot of work, I was able to see how this particular event, which I found at the time, very traumatic for how I was feeling at about where my business was, where my growth was. I thought I would be way farther along on my social media campaign. Like, I was really, really, really down on myself after this particular event. And it had to do with my perception, one of myself. But also, I was down after it because I was like, I can't believe that that fucking, that nonsense even exists. And I felt bad for other people in the room and all this other kind of nonsense. And I had to see how it served me. And it served me by it was like my soul came and bitch slapped me across the face and was like, this is not the room for you. These are not the people. These are not your mentors. Candidly, cut it out. This is not you. This glitz, this glamour, not you, girl. It's a physical reaction, right? And I had to make a choice. Do I want to be a celebrity? Do I want to be famous? Or do I want to fucking help people? Did I want to sit in the trenches and in the mud? Where it's real. Where it's not about a filter. Where it's not about Instagram. Or any filter on any social media platform. Where it's as real as it gets. Where someone feels completely trapped by the decisions they made in life, even though they did everything society said that they should. Where someone feels trapped by being in a marriage that is actually a terrible marriage. Where they feel trapped going to a job that is killing them. Do you want to help those people or do you want to play bubblegum and cotton candy and try and be a celebrity? The choice was black and white. There was no gray. The gray is that we are all human and we are all on different journeys and on different paths. But I had to make a choice. That the extremity of that particular interaction, of that particular experience, caused me to wake the fuck up and see things for what they were and really listen to people's words. Listen to the words. Like that, stop looking at the glamour. Stop looking at the cameras. Stop looking at the poses. The question was clear from the universe and also my healer at the time, another person was like, you got to fucking make a choice, girl, because you're battling yourself right now. You manifested that entire experience and you are having this deep physical energetic reaction to this. This is just, let's say I was in the wrong fucking room with the wrong fucking people and I felt it to my core. And I wish I didn't. I wish I could have fit in. But I didn't, not in that room, not by a long shot. I felt something very different. And I connected with who I was supposed to connect to, I think, in the room and got the download that I was supposed to get. And you know, then it was like, then I was just in the tumble dryer spiritually and emotionally and psychologically because it just, I realized I was going down the wrong path. And even though I found that experience really hard, it brought up a lot of trauma from actually from being in high school. So when I was in high school, people, men and women, well, not men, kids were so mean to me that I had to change high schools after 2 years. So, freshman and sophomore year, after sophomore year, I changed high schools because I had stuff written about me that wasn't true in the girls' bathroom. I don't think we realize how much that can sit with you. You know, after law school, I would go to therapy trying to deal with the depression and anxiety I had over my overwhelming student loans. But we never talked about what happened in high school. Because a fucking idiot never asked. But they were connected. The bullying and the meanness in high school were connected to the woman who then grew up and thought she had to get herself into $250,000 worth of student loan debt to be good enough. But I didn't really see how they were connected until I was in my 40s. And still, until I started really working with the right people, the transformative type of coaches. And to this day, like they say, you should never talk about, not they, some people say you should never talk about something if it makes you cry, because that means the wound is open. And here's my response to that. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't talk about it. The whole point, well, I did not think I would be talking about my high school experience. And candidly, I've always resisted the word bullying. I don't know why. That could be that could be because I was bullied and I had queen bees in high school be absolutely vicious and mean to me. Anyway, and obviously there's pain embedded in my story of having to switch schools when I was in high school. Not many people do that. Not many people switch schools when they're in high school because kids are mean to you. And I'm still a pretty sensitive person. That sensitivity lies behind a tremendous amount of toughness and grit. Actually, I think that my sensitivity has forced me to be super tough and super strong and to have tremendous grit, because I have to protect me quite a lot. But where I left off before was I was just talking about how some within personal development say if you cry about it, then it's a wound that's still open that hasn't healed, and you should only talk about things when there's a scar there. And it's no longer an open wound, which is quite ironic, because I've been to not one, not two, but several conferences where people are called up from the audience and the people within the audience start opening their wound to 500 people in the audience, other people in the audience. So like someone will get up and share an extremely traumatic story about like rape or incest or something like that. This happens in personal development. And all that oozes into 500 people. I know I'm really selling you on the whole personal development thing, right? It doesn't happen at all conferences, but I've seen it happen in quite a few, which is one of the reasons why I don't really do them anymore. But I do, I am a big fan of the Aspire Tours. I know the, not personally, but I have studied the people behind the Aspire Tours, and I fully support what they're doing. What they're doing is about business. All right, so that was a bit of a tangent as I try and reacquaint myself in a brand new studio. But the thing is, and how we started all of this was a book by Joseph Nijin called Don't Believe Everything You Think. And this is a really thin book. Like this book is like, well, you can't see it because right now I'm shooting in a place that makes me look like I'm in the clouds or something. But it's really thin. It's only maybe 120 pages, less than that. And it really is about getting you to see the neutrality of the events that happen in your life. So this is a very good, I'm going to coach my damn self. This is a very good example. I still have attached meaning and or pain and perception to what happened to me as a high school. I think that, well, I know for a fact, this is a neuroscientific fact and a fact within psychology, is that things that happen to you between age 3 and let's call it age 21 are big transformative things. They shape so much of who you are as an adult. We as walking adults are not conscious of that. And when people start going into, like when I say people, I'm saying therapists or psychotherapists or whatever, and they say, heal your inner child, many of us, myself included, would just tune that right out. And still, candidly, I do, if I'm going to be honest with you. But they have a point, because the things that happen, as I read into the science behind this, the science, not the woo, but the science of what happens, of how the events that happen to you between age 3 and 21 fundamentally shape you as an adult, then I was like, oh, shit. So, like, let's call that a truth. Let's call that an objective neuroscientific truth. Just for a second, let's go with me. Do you think that there is perhaps a reason that as adults, none of us want to talk about our childhood? None of us. There's a very deep subconscious block. And this isn't just me. This is anyone that I've ever spoken to hates to talk about inner child work, childhood, anything. All of us as adults, we don't want to go there. Do you think that it's perhaps we know that's where some of the answers lie, but they are very, very deep and dark and uncomfortable? All of us have fucking trauma as childhoods. And if you don't have trauma in childhood, well done. Freaking probably cured cancer in your last life. But most of us have some kind of childhood fuckery. Yeah. So what I did right there, like in this example today, was I went through an event that was, as I was talking about, I was like, here I go, going emotional. I think it's also because I'm tired, but taking all that aside, I still attach meaning to that event in high school. There's still pain attached to it, which means that I have to do some healing around it. And a lot of high school, and this gets back into the event that I went to in the beginning of February, a room that I was in that I shouldn't have been in. A lot of high school had to do with a lot of rejection and judgment of me. Very harsh rejection and judgment of me. And I carried that with me as an adult. I just didn't realize it. I didn't know how it was impacting my decisions, why it drove me to, it had to be Boston College. It couldn't be a beautiful state school in New York. It couldn't even, you know, I got into Boston College and Colgate. No one thought I would get into either, but I had a particular, you know, I had good grades. I was always a good student, but I was terrible at math and terrible at science, except for biology. I always loved biology. But there was no rational reason why I got into Boston College or Colgate. Like I was from a little, you know, go nowhere, do nothing kind of town. And my grades weren't phenomenal, but I could write. And I poured my soul into my essay for college. I mean, my soul. There are always signs in the beginning. I call it long form content now, but writing and speaking, there were always signs in the beginning as a child. But yeah, I got into Boston College and Colgate early admissions, not because of my grades, but because I could write and because of what I wrote about. I think, and despite me thinking I got over all of the rejection on all of the ways that I was treated, really ostracized. So I really want to be the pretty girls with the pretty girls who were really popular. I really want to be part of that group. And I could never really get friendships to stick whilst I was in high school. And that even carried through to college. And I really didn't give a shit because I fucking just nailed my grades in college. And I was like, fuck you people. And the friggin' people had fucking bows in their hair. I mean, a lot of women went to BC and candidly, they got married. They were there shopping for husbands. They had little pink bows in their hair, blonde, Protestant, blue bloods. Sounds like I have a lot of hate for these people. I don't, but that is a fact. There was a lot of women who went there, not for careers, but to find a rich husband from New England, get married, and pop out a few kids. And I was not one of those people. I was, even in college, maybe I rejected them before they even rejected me, although I do think there was a bit of both. I used to wear cornrows in my hair and I had very long hair and I wasn't blonde or perfect. I was tan and feisty. um, The rejection I went through in high school really shaped me. It really shaped how I approached college, definitely shaped my application for law school. And I probably haven't dealt with it in the way that I should, because when I was in a room where I felt I was being judged harshly and I wasn't prepared, I was not prepared. It really hurt me tremendously. And I was like, where is this? And actually, a very good friend and mentor, you know, she said to me, what is this really about? And are you going to let yourself feel it? And she encouraged me to feel it. And to this day, I think some of us have stuff that has happened to us in our lives that I personally have forgotten a lot. But then I, as I grew into my 40s, I started to remember and work through it in a it's a very uncomfortable process. But it was necessary for me to be able to be who I am today and to help people. So she really encouraged me to feel where all of this pain was coming from this particular room. And it was coming from high school, of that feeling of not being good enough, of that feeling of being judged, of that feeling of being middle class and not coming from a ton of money, of that feeling of not having tons and tons of, you know, if there's people, 25 people who are all making over, you know, 2 million that year, you know, that year. And if they're judging you because you're not even, you know, at a million yet, that judgment, it was palatable. It wasn't in my head. It was there. It was a very transactional room. And listen, honestly, I've been on trading floors at hedge funds. I know transactions. But when I'm on that trading floor in that hedge fund, I dress appropriately and my fucking game face is on. I know what armor to wear. I know how to go about it. I know the mindset that's required to be in those types of rooms. And I was expecting this room to be a very different room, but instead it was extremely transactional. And quite frankly, it made me really think about, you know, hedge funds really aren't that bad, to be honest with you. I will not get into what I think is going on in personal development right now. I will just say it is the wild, wild west. Anyone who is a new entrepreneur between year one and three, stay tuned. I'm working on a digital course that I do truly think will help you. There are a lot of incredible people in personal development. Mel Robbins, Brené Brown, Simon Sinek, Ed Milet, Jasmine Starr. I have, you know, Robin Sharma, Eckhart Tolle. Incredible people in personal development and entrepreneurship. And then there's a whole Natalie Ellis, God, she's a queen. And then there's a whole bunch of other people selling a whole bunch of bullshit. And it's dangerous. It's really dangerous. I'm going to stream of consciousness of 8 million different things. So we're going to tie it up by repetition so that we all get it, myself included, because I need to, well, let's talk about, I'm going to coach myself again. How did the experience in high school serve me? Even though I had to unpack it fucking again in February 2024 at the age of 45. All right. How did it serve me? It made me more compassionate. It made me more rebellious. It made me very comfortable being alone. It made me strong. It made me strong. Do I think someone has to be as strong as I am necessarily? Fuck me, I hope not. But when I evolve more into the Buddhist side of whatever the next level of me is becoming, I will be grateful. And largely I am grateful for that experience in high school. That experience of deep rejection, that experience of people saying lies about me and making fun of me. And there was this scene that I had. It was by the lockers. I'll never forget it as a kid. And there was this girl, Christina. I remember her last name began with a D. And she sang the song. There was this queen bee who thought that I was after her guy and I wasn't. Something had to do with a guy. Always had to do with like me getting attention that it was difficult. It was difficult growing up. And I remember this girl, Christina, and she had glasses and really big teeth. But when she, we all grew up together. So when she blossomed, she had like these massive boobs, which I always thought was funny. And Christina sang this country western song called Stand By Your Man. It's by Bonnie, anyway, it's an older song. It was like in the 70s or 80s, an older song, Stand By Your Man. And she was singing it to this queen bee. I can't remember the name of the queen bee. I have this thing about forgetting people's names. She was singing it to her as this woman. Oh, look at what my brain is doing. As this girl was really ripping me to shreds publicly, like to support this girl, because it was like, stand by your man. Like she's saying it to her and like as if I was like this person trying to steal him, whatever. They really pit women against each other early in life, don't they? Yeah. So I'll never forget that. I'll never forget the hate. But then as I got older, I realized there was also fear. They knew I was smart and they knew I was different and that I was unpredictable because I wouldn't play by their rules. I always had a really good sense of right and wrong as a kid. And there's power in that. And so all that hate, all of that rejection, the name of the high school was Mayapak. It was in New York. All of that, it made me fucking fearless. That is the mindset switch. That is the perception of the events. So with that, I'm going to close and read this again to you so that we can close the loop on this thought. So I want it to sit with you, your perception of the events that are happening in your life. So what Joseph said is, most people live in their own thoughts and perceptions of the world. The meaning or thinking we give an event is what determines how we ultimately feel about it. The meaning or thinking is the filter through which we see life from then on. Because of this, we live through a perception of reality, not the reality itself. Reality is that the event happened with no meaning, no thinking, no interpretation of it. Any meaning or thinking we give the event is on us. And that is how our perception of reality is created. This is how our experience of life is created from the inside out. It's not about the events that happen in our lives, but it's about our interpretation of them, which causes us to feel good or bad about something. This is how people in third world countries can be happier than people in first world countries, and people in first world countries can be more miserable than people in third world countries. Our feelings do not come from external events, but from our own thinking about the events. Let that sit with you for a bit. One of the easiest ways to rewire or remap how you think about an event is through journaling. This is how I was trained by many different coaches who are masters at it. Journaling prompts. And so you write out the thought, and then you just kind of say, there's certain prompts I won't get into here because there's journal prompts for all different kinds of topics, but you write out through stream of consciousness what your thoughts are, and then you take a pause. And for me, I pray, and I ask the universe for some guidance, but I say, God, universe, angels, whoever is listening at the moment, usually all of them, for me in particular, I've got like 30 up there. Please help me to see this in another way. Please help me to see this in a more loving or in a more compassionate way. And then I rewrite the thoughts about the event. That is remapping. The journaling of first how your thoughts are coming in naturally, and then you have to ask, how can I see this differently? I ask for guidance, but you can just say to yourself, if you don't believe in God or universe, you could say, how could I see this differently, this event? Now, I did it as an exercise here, right? With the bullying that I just did in high school on the fly, which is not what I was planning to do, but here we are. How can I see these events differently? What is a more loving, what's a more compassionate way of seeing them? I just lost my job. Okay. I'm a failure. What's a more compassionate way of seeing that? A job that was no longer the right job for me has finally left my life. And new opportunities are coming in every single moment of every single day. All I have to do is see them. That's remapping. When I do coaching, that's stage two of my coaching method. But you can do it on your own. All you need is pen and paper and the prompts. And the practice, you have to do it every day. The remapping of how your brain works, of how you perceive events. Let me say this again. The remapping of how you perceive events is something you must practice every day. Because you've gone your whole adult life thinking according to how society or other people told you to think. This is about thinking for yourself. I love you, and I can't wait to see you at the next episode. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you did, please forward it to friends, and I would be so grateful for a review on Spotify and Apple. Also, make sure you follow me on LinkedIn under Dawn Marie and my website, www.dawnmarie.co. Please note, there is no E in Marie. No excuses. Check out the freebies tab on my website for guides on negotiating income and gaining clarity in your role. You can also follow me on YouTube at I Am Dawn Marie. For the ladies, if you're a female executive in finance or law, you can subscribe to my newsletter, Prime, which is all about taking bold action as a woman. I'll put links for these in my show notes. Until next time, I love you. Get your nose down, take a deep breath, and jump. Keep doing the things that you fear.